Hey there, and welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into something, well, huge in the tech world, Java.
It really is. Hard to ignore.
Yeah, it's almost its 30th birthday, which is kind of wild to think about.
30 years is an eternity in tech.
Absolutely. And yet it's still powering so much stuff. Android apps, massive e-commerce platforms, embedded systems, you know, those complex corporate backends.
Ziad, deeply integrated.
But that long history, that enduring presence, it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
You mean, has it kept up?
Exactly. Has Java truly evolved enough to keep pace with how fast modern web development moves? And like, looking ahead to 2025, is it still a top choice for developers? Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today, figure out what a web application actually is, explore Java's specific strengths there, and lay out the process and tools for actually building with it.
That's a really good way to frame it. It's not just, you know, nodding at Java's age. It's about really getting the why. Why is it still so relevant when there are so many other options out there?
Right. Understanding the fundamentals.
Yeah, grasping those underlying reasons is key, I think, to appreciating why it's stuck around.
Couldn't agree more. So let's start super basic. What exactly is a web application?
Good starting point.
This is the simplest terms, right? It's software you get to through your web browser. The great thing is you don't download anything. You don't install anything on your own computer. Totally different from, you know, traditional desktop software.
Right, like the old days of installing from a CD or even downloading installers.
Exactly. Think of something like the FriendlyWay Cloud platform. If you've used that, boom, you've used a web app. And they're not all the same, are they?
Not at all. There's quite a bit of variety.
We have dynamic web applications. Those serve up content that changes based on what you do.
Like online shopping carts, maybe?
Perfect example. Or real-time dashboards, e-commerce sites. Then you've got static web applications. Much simpler.
Just fixed content.
Pretty much. Simple websites delivering content just as it's stored. And beyond those, you hear about things like SPAs, single-page applications, and PWAs, progressive web applications.
Yeah, those offer richer, more app-like experiences right in the browser.
So how did we get here? How did these interactive apps come about?
Well, it's fascinating if you trace the history. That big shift towards really interactive web apps, it kicked off mainly with JavaScript and server-side scripting languages, late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, okay. And Java's role?
Java was in there early. It made a really foundational contribution with its servlet API.
Servlets, right. Heard of those.
And pretty quickly after that, you saw major services launch, things we totally take for granted now, like Gmail and Google Maps. They really showed off what web apps could do.
Wow. So Java was powering that level of innovation way back then. That historical context helps. So, high level, how do they work, this client-server thing?
Yeah, the basic model is client-server.
Yeah.
Your browser, that's the client.
Got it.
It sends an HTTP request over the internet to a remote server. The server does its thing, processes the request, and then sends back an HTTP response.
Like ordering food. I send my order, the kitchen sends back the food.
That's a great analogy, actually. You, the client, send your order, the request, to the kitchen, the server, and they send back your meal, the response. Perfect.
Okay, simple enough.
But sticking with your food analogy, that simple back and forth, it actually hides a more complex, multi-tiered architecture underneath. That's what really sets web apps apart from, say, a traditional desktop app that's just one program on your computer.
Multi-tiered. How so?
Typically, you have at least three main layers or tiers.
Okay.
First, the presentation tier. In your feed analogy, that's the front of house, the waiters, the hosts.
The part I interact with.
Exactly. They communicate with your browser, take the order, bring the finished meal. Then there's the application tier, the service tier.
The kitchen.
Precisely. The chef and the kitchen staff. This is where the core business logic happens. How to cook the meal, the recipes, managing the cooking process.
Right, the brains of the operation.
And finally, the storage tier. Think of this as the pantry, the refrigerator.
Where the ingredients are kept.
Exactly. This tier communicates with the database, fetching ingredients, storing new stock. What's fascinating here is this layered approach is key for scalability.
How so?
Well, you can add more waiters or more chefs or bigger pantries independently, depending on where the bottleneck is, and it creates a clear separation of concerns.
So each part does its job without interfering too much with the others.
Right. It makes the whole system more robust, easier to manage, especially when it gets really big and complex.
That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Understanding those layers helps. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. With all the new languages, new frameworks popping up constantly, why is Java still such a big player in web development after all this time?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
What are those core strengths that give it such staying power?
It really boils down to a powerful combination of factors that directly tackle the big challenges in web development. First off, you absolutely have to talk about platform independence.
Write once, run anywhere. Whoa-rah.
That's the one. And it's not just a catchy slogan. It means you compile your Java code into standard bytecode.
Okay.
And then you can deploy that same bytecode across almost any device or operating system as long as it has a Java virtual machine, a JVM, installed.
So less hassle deploying everywhere.
Huge advantage. It cuts down deployment headaches, lets you reach more users on different systems, and kind of future-proofs your app against changes in the underlying hardware or OS. Strategically, that's massive.
Okay, platform independence. What else?
Next up, robust security and high reliability. This is a big one for enterprises.
How so? Built-in security.
Yeah, Java has strong features baked in, like bytecode verification, secure class loading, stuff that acts like a first line of defense. And then you have frameworks like Spring Security that layer on top, offering really serious enterprise-grade protection against common web attacks.
So it's secure by design and extensible.
Exactly. And these aren't new, untested features. They're battle-hardened over decades. For businesses, that often means lower risk, easier compliance. Plus, you add in things like automatic garbage collection, which helps prevent memory leaks.
Always good.
Extensive testing tools and really good backward compatibility, which makes long-term maintenance easier. Well, you can see why it becomes the foundation for mission-critical systems.
Like banks and telecoms you mentioned earlier.
Precisely. They rely on that enterprise-grade reliability.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Security and reliability are key. What about speed and handling lots of users?
Ah, scalability and performance. Another core strength. Java's frameworks, especially things like Spring, give you tools to scale both horizontally adding more machines and vertically making machines more powerful.
So it can grow with demand.
Easily. It means Java works well for a small company website, but also for a massive global e-commerce site handling millions of transactions. It adapts.
And performance. Does it feel fast?
It's designed for performance. It has excellent support for multi-threading, which means it can do many things concurrently, making apps feel responsive. Plus, it uses a just-in-time, or JIT compiler, to optimize code as it runs, and its garbage collection is pretty efficient these days. All that adds up to good execution speed, especially for demanding high-traffic stuff.
Okay, so it can handle the load and feels quick. Good.
Then there's the ecosystem, an extensive collection of libraries and frameworks. This is huge for developer productivity.
Like Spring you mentioned.
Exactly. Spring is a massive framework that simplifies building complex enterprise apps. You've also got Hibernate for making database interaction much easier. It handles mapping Java objects to database tables.
So less boilerplate code for common tasks.
A lot less.
Yeah.
And the Java class library itself is enormous. It covers core utilities, networking UI components. Developers rarely have to build common stuff from scratch.
Saves time, leverages proven code.
Definitely. It speeds up development dramatically.
What about finding help or other developers?
That leads right into wide community support. Java has one of the biggest, most active developable communities on the planet.
So easy to find answers if you get stuck.
Absolutely. Quick problem resolution, constant improvement of Java itself and its tools, tons of resources. You can even influence Java's future through the Java Community Process Program. Plus, the documentation is generally excellent, countless tutorials. It makes learning and troubleshooting way more accessible. That's a massive asset for any project, especially long-term ones.
A strong community is definitely a plus. Anything else?
One more crucial point for today's world. Ease of integration with modern technologies.
Meaning it plays well with others.
Very well. It fully supports things like RESTful and SOAP web services.
Which are key for microservices, right?
Yeah, exactly. Makes it a natural fit for those modern modular architectures. It also talks easily with existing corporate systems, ERPs, CRMs, Vital, and big companies. And its APIs and tools make it pretty straightforward to connect to third-party apps, order legacy systems, and importantly, all the major cloud platforms. It's really strong for cloud native development.
Wow.
So we connect this to the bigger picture. All these things together, platform independence, security, reliability, scalability, performance, the huge ecosystem, the community, the integration capabilities, they make Java a really powerful, future-proof, and frankly, strategically smart choice, especially for complex, large-scale web solutions that need to last.
That is a really compelling case. It paints a clear picture of why it's not just surviving, but thriving. So what does this all mean for actually building something? You've sold me on Java's power.
Huh.
But what's the actual roadmap? If I have an idea for a web app, how do I go from that idea to a deployed application using Java?
Excellent question. Because, you know, the power of Java, or any tech really, comes alive in a good process. It's true, Java can be complex, but it's just one piece. The whole development project needs structure. Usually it involves several key steps.
Okay, lay them out for us.
First, step one, gather requirements and plan the project. And this isn't just like making a quick list.
It needs to be thorough.
Really thorough. You need to deeply define the app's purpose, its goals, who the target users are, get a real handle on the scope. Then you list out all the core functions needed. Then you choose your tech stack, the tools, the frameworks. That's where you decide on specific Java technologies. And crucially, plan your team and roles. A shaky foundation here sinks projects.
Got it. Solid planning first. What's next?
Step two, set up the environment. The basics for any Dista dev.
Like installing the tools?
Yep. You need the Java Development Kit, the JDK, an IDE, an integrated development environment like IntelliJ IDEA or Eclipse helps a lot. You'll need a database, maybe MySQL or PostgreSQL, a server to run the app, like Apache Tomcat is common, and Git. Absolutely essential for version control, especially if you're working in a team.
So getting your workshop ready.
Exactly, your digital workshop. Step three, design the architecture plan and develop the backend.
Architecture first, then coding.
Usually, yes. You map out the application structure, often using standard design patterns like MVC model view control or maybe microservices to guide how the pieces fit together.
Okay.
You plan the database schema, how the data is organized, map out the workflow, then you start writing the Java code for the business logic, the data processing. This is where frameworks like Spring Boot really accelerate things, and Hibernate simplifies talking to the database.
Right, the core Java work happens here.
This is the engine room?
Now, what about the part the user actually sees, the front end? How does Java fit there, especially with all the JavaScript frameworks around?
That's a really important distinction. Java is mainly backend, but it does have tools like Timeleaf and JSP for server-side rendering.
Where the server builds the HTML page.
Right, but for really modern interactive interfaces, you're more likely to see JavaScript frameworks taking the lead. Things like React.js, Angular Vue.js, built with HTML, CSS, JavaScript.
So Java handles the back end, JavaScript the front end.
Often, yes. The key is building good APIs, application programming interfaces.
To connect the two.
Exactly. These APIs allow the JavaScript front end and the Java back end to talk to each other smoothly, exchanging data.
Right.
That integration is critical.
Okay, makes sense. Front end, back end, connected by APIs. What's the final step?
Step five, test and deploy. Can't skip this.
Quality assurance.
Absolutely. You need thorough testing, unit tests for small code pieces, integration tests for how they work together, functional tests for features, usability tests, performance tests, making sure it actually works correctly and can handle real users.
And deployment, getting out there.
Yep. You use build tools like Maven or Gradle we'll touch on to package your application into a deployable artifact, like a JAR or WAR file. Then you deploy that package onto a web server or application server. Could be on your own hardware, but more often these days, it's on a cloud platform like AWS, Google Cloud, Azure.
And you're live.
Pretty much. But it doesn't end there. Post-deployment, you need ongoing monitoring, fixing bugs that pop up, applying updates and security patches. It's a continuous cycle. And this raises an important question, or maybe reinforces a point. Each of these steps, done carefully, contributes not just to a working app, but to one that's secure, scalable, and maintainable over its whole life. You can't really skimp on any of them.
That's a fantastic roadmap. Really helps visualize the whole process from A to Z.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned some tools. Let's zoom in on the specific technologies in Java's arsenal. We know Java's robust, but what are the concrete tools developers are using day to day? Let's break down Java's toolkit by what it does.
Good idea. Yeah, the ecosystem is deep. For the back end, the engine room stuff, you have Jakarta Servlet. These are kind of the fundamental building blocks. Java classes that handle raw client requests, generate HTTP responses, foundational but often abstracted by frameworks now.
Okay, the low level.
Then Spring Web MVC, part of the huge Spring framework. It gives you a structured way, the model view controller pattern, to build web apps, separating concerns, makes code cleaner.
MVC, common pattern.
Very. And then Spring Boot. This thing is transformative for many. It makes getting a Spring app running way simpler, lots of convention over configuration, much faster development start.
Beautiful setup, more coding.
Exactly. And for security, Spring Security, essential for enterprise apps, handles authentication, authorization, encryption, protects against common attacks, controls who can do what.
Critical stuff. Okay, what about databases?
For database handling, the base layer is JDBC, Java Database Connectivity. It's the standard Java API for connecting to relational databases and running SQL queries. Everything database-related builds on this.
A basic connection.
Then JPA, Jakarta Persistence. This is an API specification for object relational mapping, ORM. The idea is to work with database data using Java objects, cutting down on repetitive SQL code.
ORM, right? Mapping objects to tables.
And Hibernate is the most popular implementation of JPA. It does that mapping, handles database interactions, often hiding a lot of the raw SQL complexity. Hugely popular.
Okay, so tools to make database work easier. What about the front end? From the Java side.
On the front end, again, keeping in mind JavaScript often leads here now, but Java offers JSP, Java Server Pages. This lets you embed Java code right inside HTML pages to generate dynamic content on the server.
Mixing code and presentation.
Kind of. Mm. And JSF, Java Server Faces. This is a component-based framework for building UIs within the Java ecosystem. Think reusable UI pieces.
More structured UI building in Java.
Right. Now, for putting it all together, project build and management, you have Apache Maven, very established tool, uses an XML file, the pom.xml, to define the project, manage dependencies, and automate the build process.
Ooh.
Plugin-based.
Maven's been around.
It has. And then Gradle, a more modern, flexible alternative, uses Groovy or Kotlin for its build scripts, often seen as more powerful, especially for complex, multi-project setups.
Newer, more flexible build tool.
Generally, yeah. And finally, for actually running the app, deployment. A very common choice is Apache Tomcat. It's an open source web server and, importantly, a servlet container. It runs the serverless JSPs, JSFs that make up many Java web applications.
The thing that actually serves the app.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is this whole ecosystem isn't just like a random box of tools. It's a really comprehensive, integrated set. Developers have robust, specialized options for pretty much every part of building a web app. That gives them flexibility, but also immense power.
That's an impressive list. It really shows the depth and breadth of Java's tooling.
Yeah.
So let's circle back our initial question. Java's place in modern web development, looking at 2025. What's the verdict?
I think the verdict is pretty clear.
Yeah.
Java has absolutely maintained its position. It's still a really strong top-tier choice.
Especially for certain kinds of apps.
Definitely. It's often the go-to for its exceptional reliability, its proven scalability, and solid performance. Particularly for those big, complex, cloud-based, data-heavy enterprise applications.
The mission-critical stuff we talked about.
Exactly. But it's also important to remember Java's versatility beyond the web.
Right. We focused on web. But it does more.
So much more. It's still building native mobile apps, robust desktop applications, complex software for the Internet of Things. It's incredibly adaptable.
So its reach is really wide.
Hugely wide. Mm-hmm. And that broad adaptability, that's what continues to make it such an impactful technology for turning all sorts of ideas into real digital solutions.
Yeah, that versatility combined with that write once, run anywhere idea.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That philosophy, while maybe not perfectly realized in every single case, still underpins why it's chosen. It offers a reliable foundation to build on, aiming for reach across different platforms, securely and efficiently. It's a proven workhorse.
That's a really powerful way to sum it up, a proven workhorse.
Yeah.
And it makes me think, looking forward, given Java's long history, its constant adaptation, What emerging tech trends do you think Java might be uniquely positioned to really shape or thrive in over, say, the next 5 or 10 years?
Interesting question.
Maybe things like AI integration, quantum computing interfaces, new kinds of distributed systems. Where might Java's strengths give it an edge? Well, that's something for you, our listener, to chew on. Keep exploring this fascinating technology. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive. We'll catch you next time.